It's time now for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, who joins us here in the studio. What was I trying to say? Seasonal affective disorder? Is that what it is?
It's seasonal affect disorder.
Affect disorder.
That's right.
Okay.
Or SAD, sad.
SAD, yeah.
That's right.
I remembered the acronym. I just couldn't remember the words.
Well, the light gets less suddenly, dramatically, and it just, you feel like it. Oh, especially up north, and I was...
I'm totally blaming it on that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was... It could be like starting to get, when I was in Nantucket a few years ago, it was starting to get dark like at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I grew
Needless
up in...
Needless to say, we're not broadcasting
from
Nantucket.
grew up in Michigan, and it got super dark early.
Yes.
Although it's going to start getting dark a lot earlier in just a couple of days, because we're going to be switching from daylight savings time over the weekend, so sunset's going to be an hour earlier starting next week.
And, you know, you're probably saying, what does this have to do with history? Yet... We've stumbled into something.
You know, I wasn't actually asking that yet, but...
but it is coming up on Sunday, mm-hmm. and that is kind of an interesting little bit of a history. At least it was a New Zealander who actually... That's where they filmed Lord of the Rings.
Right.
A New Zealander.
That's the two claims to fame for New Zealand. Lord of the Rings
and Daylight Saving Time.
George
Vernon Hudson proposed
the idea of Daylight Savings.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so Germany and Austria, Hungary, organized the first implementation of this in 1916. And then other countries did it. And, you know, the idea, well, maybe it would help with farming and that kind of thing.
That sounds like a war move. 1916 in Europe,
say,
that's probably part
exactly,
of the war effort, right?
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that. That's when I looked at that. I was like, isn't this interesting? But I thought, 1895, what's going on in New Zealand in 1895?
Nothing.
Nothing ever goes
on in New Zealand anywhere. Until they started filming Lord of the Rings, it was just Deadsville the whole time.
Look at the mountains. Well, they...
That's beautiful. I hope Peter Jackson shows
now
up.
Now, I stumbled across an interesting fact that supposedly in 2019, the European Union are thinking about maybe doing away with...
That keeps coming up.
I know. And there, and there's always a few states that don't change their clocks. Hawaii, Arizona, some exceptions. American Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico, Northern Marina Islands, U.S. Minor Outlying Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
So basically, U.S. territories.
U.S. territories, right.
No.
And I would be totally fine with that. Getting rid of daylight saving time, that's fine. You don't have to worry about switching your clocks forward and back. You don't have to be fiddling with the clock mechanisms in every single clock in your house, because they're all different.
They're all different.
Every one, you're breaking out the manual, you're trying to push random buttons, because you always forget after six months how to do it. It's real annoying. At the same time, I like the sun setting later in the summertime.
Yes,
I can't get over that. Like, I don't want the sun to be setting at 7 o'clock in July.
Well, that fall back, everybody enjoys getting that quote-unquote
extra hour
of sleep or something.
Oh, I blow that. I just stay up late.
Yes, exactly. Hey, it's 1 a.m. again.
1 a.m., yay.
Let's do it right.
Oh, it's real cool if you're like on a laptop or on a computer where the clock changes automatically.
Yeah.
It's that rare time when you can watch the clock go to, from 1:59 to 1 a.m.
Let's get this next hour right this time.
Completely wasted that hour. Yeah.
Well, there's some other things going on this week. In fact, on this same day is a really interesting little nugget of history. On November 4th, 1862, is when a fellow actually has a North Carolina connection. Richard Gatling patented his six-barrel repeating gun that we know today as the Gatling gun.
Yeah.
But he was born in Hertford County in 1818. And his first invention was a screw propeller for a boat, but he lost that patent to another inventor. Now, he also patented a rice seed.
Immediately started thinking about guns.
He also patented a rice seed planter. That didn't go over big here, which he converted to a wheat planter after moving to the Midwest, and then he earned a medical degree and practiced as a physician. Now, the onset of the Civil War comes, and he's distressed by the number of troops dying from disease, and he believed that if he could make a gun that would fire more efficiently, this would cut down on the need to have more soldiers. Now, this is bizarre reasoning.
Really, really.
This is kind of arms escalation.
Logic.
Yeah, that's right. Well, if we have, then we won't need as many people shooting rifles if we have this Gatling gun, and so therefore there'll be a less need for soldiers. I don't know where the logic ended. Like, exactly what stops you from, you know, wanting to win the war?
I don't know if this book has been written, but if it hasn't, it should be about the very logical and reasonable and humanitarian rationalizations that the inventors of these things come up with. Because that's a good story.
That's a good one.
That sounds like a perfectly logical argument. Yeah. Like, yeah, justify this as a humanitarian measure. And the guillotine, same thing, right? Like, that was invented as a humane way of executing people.
That's right.
Maybe correctly.
That's right.
Compared to other forms of execution.
But this is a kind of like bizarre thing of thinking that people were thinking about this going, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, other people saw some different
things.
But, you know, we've seen that in movies or we've stumbled across Gatling guns being used. But to know that
at this point, I mostly encounter them in video games.
Yeah.
Ooh, Gatling gun.
Okay,
finally, I can get through this level. And then it doesn't.
Flamethrower or Gatling gun?
And then
which
it never works. It never works.
Never.
Firing super slow. You can't aim it. It hits the bad guys and nothing happens.
Nothing happens. That's right.
Wish I'd kept the flamethrower.
Well, there's.
We always joke about how, like, we have no idea what we're going to start talking about when we begin.
That's
We've been going for 5 minutes and
exactly.
We're already on.
Well, it's great. It's just great. This is what makes
Gatling
it
gun strategy.
Because if you're reading this stuff, yeah, and you come across these, this is how our minds work when it comes to, like, well, where did this come from? How did somebody get this kind of a zany idea?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interposed with, of course, with real history that has real significance. But there's, like, this one is an interesting one. We always call about, oh, here in the Carolinas. But let's go back to
before
October
it was Carolina.
30th. That's
yeah.
right, October 30th, 1629. And England's King Charles I grants much of what is North and South Carolina to his Attorney General, Sir Robert Heath. I don't think he has any connection with the Heath Bar, but maybe he would have been more profitable. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was called Carolina, not Alina, Lana, meaning the land
of
Charles.
They were just spelling it phonetically, like the accent,
Carolina.
You know. We're going to Carolina.
Finally, there's an explanation. That makes much sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how, and it was the idea was fairly entrepreneurial.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like that explanation, Aaron. That is brilliant. Carolina.
No. So I don't know if you can shed some light on this for me. I heard this once, and I don't know if this is just an urban legend and it's completely false or if it's actually true, that obviously when British colonists were sailing over to the future U.S., they spoke with a British accent. So the accents, the American accent and the British accent evolved away from each other over the 100 years. But what I heard, and I don't know if this is true, is that it's actually the British accent that has evolved more than the American accent. So if you go back to the 16, 1700s and you spoke to British people, they talked more like Americans do today. And it's that accent that's evolved more than ours. But I don't know if that's the case. I only heard that once, and that, I mean, you hear something once, who even knows, but
I don't, that's a very good, it's a good question.
I was hoping you knew.
Answer.
I don't, yeah.
No, because I
have to look this up.
We can play around with, you know, taking words like in English and then kind of start to broaden them out over time.
Right.
And you begin to feel like,
yeah, I mean, the accent certainly evolved on one or both sides of the ocean. It's just a question of which one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, it is interesting. And of course, everybody that's coming over here from Britain are thinking of themselves as British colonists.
Yes.
So they're not thinking of themselves as Americans. That takes a while to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
But as for dialects, that's a really, really intriguing question. See, look at this.
Anyway, Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina. I think that is brilliant. Brilliant. Well, this week wouldn't be complete without at least mentioning October 29th, 1929, when the stock market crashed.
Yes.
And the separation from, you know, the Roaring Twenties into the Depression era. And, of course, when Herbert Hoover, who had been successful in World War I, helping to feed people starving in Belgium and getting NGOs to contribute in governments, and just thought, well, that this would, we would work ourselves out of this, mm-hmm. and it didn't, of course, work.
Yeah. This is the fascinating thing that I learned, and this wasn't even that long ago, about Herbert Hoover and what a great and accomplished person he was before he became president.
Oh,
just like
gosh,
such significant achievements in, I think, engineering and during World War I when he organized that effort, and his commerce secretary in the 20s.
Right.
Just all of the things that he did. This is one of the most accomplished president elects of all time.
Right.
And then he gets into office and he just gets faced with the one problem that he can't manage to deal with.
Well, he kept thinking that it was human nature and motivation, and people would come together and they would solve it, not realizing he had the biggest tool of all, which was the federal government.
Yeah.
And that becomes a major factor. The other thing that happens this week, which is kind of interesting, is, of course, you know, what this week wouldn't be complete without mentioning Halloween.
Right.
And or All Hallows' Eve. But it's also notable for a couple things. Martin Luther in Germany nails what are called 95 theses to a Wittenberg chapel door. These are arguments against saying this fundraising scheme the Pope was doing, saying, wait a minute, this isn't exactly the way it should be, and reinterprets it and changes history by all of these nation states suddenly saying, no, we don't want to be having Rome control everything. That it coincides with the rise of nationalism in many of these countries. The other thing that happens, which is more closer to North Carolina, is in on that same day, October 31st, 1765, when angry citizens of Wilmington hold a mock funeral for Lady Liberty the day before the Stamp Act was to go into effect. Now, I just love the creativity that these folks had. The Stamp Act was passed by Britain to pay for a seven-year war where they had these enormous debts, and they didn't want to pay for it. And they also had 10,000 British troops here and officers, and they didn't want them back anywhere. They said, well, let's make the colonists pay for this. So they imposed a tax. They just didn't consult the folks in the colony. And so the Stamp Act was placed on taxes on most forms of paper. Newspapers, letters, pamphlets, wills, you name it. Anything that was paper had a Stamp Act, was going to have this tax. Well, these Wilmington folks came up with a really creative idea. They held a mock funeral on Halloween. And they actually had, I think, a person in a casket, an effigy of Liberty in a casket, and carried the casket to a churchyard in a mock funeral procession. The idea being that Liberty has died in the colonies because of this. But before they were, you know, they were all standing around, but before they committed the casket to the ground, they checked Liberty's vital signs, and they were able to say, good heavens, Liberty still has an existence in the colony. Now, that's really creative protest.
That's cheesy.
Yes, but this is 1765. There is no internet. Nobody can run this by and say, let's do a selfie. I think that's kind of a creative way.
Who got to play Liberty in this?
I don't know.
How is that cast?
Cool? Well, several weeks later that, and I think we'll probably bump into it, that the person who's appointed to this terrible post comes into Wilmington, and when people know this mob descends, and they persuade him to.
Are we putting persuade in scare quotes here?
Well, yeah, I think that's
okay,
right. Yeah, it's scare quotes. That's right. The quotes, there to. It might be best if he reconsidered that, and he does. And then everyone is applauding, and they put him on a chair and make a parade through town. So apparently Wilmington had some really creative ideas.
And a lot of parades,
and
apparently.
A lot of parades.
Like, putting him on a chair and parading him through town is probably like riding on this rickety chair going, are you sure about this? Like, don't worry, we carried a guy in a coffin through town weeks ago, and everything was totally fine.
Well, Governor Tryon, actually, because the colonial governors originally, since most of the colonization was down at the coast before it started spreading out, they could pick and choose. And so there was a point at which Governor Tryon was considering Wilmington until this came up. And he was like, yeah, no, I don't think so.
The mob has persuaded me to change my mind on that one, too.
That's right. So that's another one. Now, there's another one that's kind of close to home, and I just love it. It's about Daniel Boone. He has a birthday this week, November 2nd.
So we'll wrap up with this. We're almost out of time.
Yeah. 1734, he's born. We think of Daniel Boone, Kentucky, but there is a local Orange County connection. Now, if you've ever been over at Hillsborough, you've seen the Daniel Boone Center. You'll see a big figure, almost looks like Paul Bunyan.
But actually,
James Freeland, the Walt Disney of Hillsborough, really was a great history enthusiast, knew his history, and it turns out that Daniel Boone actually was in Hillsborough. He actually was an agent for what was called the Transylvania Company to help open up portions of Kentucky. Transylvania, I always think, is kind of they wanted the name of a state that, but it was like the people said, no. Congress said, no, we're not going to have a state named Transylvania. They would have had the lock on Halloween.
Oh, yeah, big time.
But anyways,
a lot of confusion with Transylvania being right next to Pennsylvania.
Yes.
That would have been a little bit confusing.
And
if
you ever come into Hillsborough, and I'll just mention this one last thing, you go downtown near the old courthouse, you will see a large arrowhead-shaped stone monument that's dedicated to Daniel Boone, actually leading settlers from there out to Kentucky. But the metal plaques come from the battleship Maine, because the enthusiast fellow who set these up and verified these, he loved Daniel Boone, but he also loved this particular aspect of history, he salvaged the metal to make these plaques. So you can actually touch the battleship Maine. That's
awesome.
A whole separate story. We'll get that to. We'll just keep going. Oh, wait, there's more.
Again, history matters. Scott Washington.
Always fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.